Hello, good afternoon or good night where I'm speaking from, Europe. Recently I've watched a movie based on the memoirs of a British journalist who lived in New York for a few years, and it's called How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. And I think this is an apt title to describe President Obama's policy towards the Islamic world. Not for want of trying, because one of the main issues that Obama sought to differentiate between himself and George W. Bush was his supposed reconstruction of America's relations with the Islamic world. And this was very clear from the first moment he came to power, starting from his inauguration speech when he pledged the new way forward with the Islamic world. He gave his first interview to an Arabic television network, the Al Arabiya television network. Then he submissively bowed to the Saudi monarch in one of the international gatherings. He instructed NASA to reach out to the Arabs. He recently intervened in the Ground Zero Mosque, and so on and so forth. And most revealingly, perhaps, was his personal aspect of this. For many years in his early age, I mean, he hid his Muslim roots, not only his second name Hussein, which is obviously Islamic, but even his first name, Barak. I mean, Barak, of course, is derived from the Arabic Baraka, just like President Mubarak of Egypt, meaning blessing. He called himself Bari until the early 80s by his own account. And suddenly, when he became a president, he made this long-hidden identity his trump card in his relations with the Arab world, as he said in his famous speech in Egypt in June 2009. He said, and I'm quoting, "I'm a Christian, but my father came from a Kenyan family that includes a generation of Muslims," which is something of a euphemism. He could have said directly that my father is a Muslim, and that's all. And then he described how he had Muslim experiences in Indonesia, in Michigan, and so on and so forth. And this, he said, guided his conviction that the partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is and not what Islam is not. Unfortunately, he showed ever since he became president that he doesn't really understand what Islam is. And his entire perception of Islam is what he himself described of what Islam is not. And again, if we go to his Cairo address, he reconstructed history starting from America, of course, and then in the sense that he said that Islam has always been a part of America from the ground founding fathers onward. But as far as the Middle East and world affairs are concerned, he referred to the what we call post-colonial rhetoric, that is, the West is to be blamed for everything. Islam is harmless, passive, doesn't do any wrong. And then he said, most recently, the problem has been with Western colonialism. It denied the rights and opportunities to many Muslims. Then came the Cold War, and again denied opportunities and rights to many Muslims. And as a result of this, violent extremists have exploited this tension in a small but potent minority of Muslims, which culminated in the attacks of September 11, 2001, and the continued efforts of these extremists to engage in violence. And gradually he speaks about extremists. He doesn't mention, of course, their religion, and this has been most recently illustrated in the National Security Strategy paper, which was published a few months ago, in which defined the enemy confronting the West, America, as Al-Qaeda and its terrorist affiliations. No mention of religion whatsoever. And then when his advisor on counterterrorism, John Brennan, was queried about this issue, he said, our enemy is not terrorism, because terrorism is but a tactic, which is fair enough. Of course, terrorism is a tactic, but the question is what ideology drives particular types of terrorism. And in this case, we all know what it is, just like the Bush administration NSS paper in 2006 stated clearly that the struggle was against militant Islamic radicalism and the great ideological conflict of the early years of the 20th century. So the Bush administration defined what was the ideology behind the tactic of terrorism. The Obama administration doesn't want, and then this Brennan, when he was asked again, he said, nor do we describe our enemy as jihadist or Islamist, because jihad is holy struggle, a legitimate tenet of Islam, meaning to purify oneself or one's community. That, of course, is a complete nonsense. I mean, there is a certain hadith, which is the tradition attributed to the Prophet Muhammad, which implies that the so-called great jihad is self-purification. But throughout history, nobody understood jihad in these terms. I mean, you know, when the Ottomans, for example, declared jihad on the Western powers in World War I, they didn't mean that Muslims will sit in their homes throughout the world and pray for God's success. Or when the various religious authorities declared jihad on the Jews in 1948, they didn't think that Muslims will do nothing. So everyone knows what jihad means, but of course the Obama administration tries to ignore this fact, and by way of ignoring this fact, they ignore the wider question, the wider history of Islam, and in this respect, we have to accept the fact that Islam, from the outset, was a religion, and a political community, unlike Christianity, and it was embodied in the personality of in the person of the Prophet Muhammad, who was a spiritual leader, at the same time he was a political leader, at the same time he was a military leader, and basically aimed at nothing short of expanding his religion worldwide, which in a way is no different from other religions at certain points in history. But it was imperialist from the beginning, and unlike Christianity and the Western society, which has undergone certain processes over the past 200 years of secularization, separation of state and church, and so on and so forth, in Islam all these things are still integrated, and Muslims still viewed their objectives in these terms. And in this respect, Bin Laden and his likes are not a small minority in Islam. If we just recall what was the reaction throughout the Islamic world at 9/11, most Muslims basically applauded the event. Nor have Muslims abandoned their aspirations for world domination. I mean, to this very day, I mean, Muslims unabashedly pine for the restoration, for example, of Spain, you know, to the Muslim domain. Osama bin Laden highlighted the tragedy of Andalusia after the 9/11 attacks. The perpetrators of the March 2004 Madrid bombings, which killed hundreds of people, mentioned the revenge for the loss of Spain as one of their objectives. And of course, it's no coincidence that a certain building, mosque to be built, is called Cordoba House, which of course, again, harps to the Spanish imperial epoch. So this is the essence of Islam, and this is what Obama doesn't understand. And of course, this has caused his policy to fail on every count. Now, we don't have too much time for presentation, so I'll go very quickly through some major points, and then we can open it to questions. The first and most important issue is, of course, Iran, because Iran and its quest for nuclear arms is the clearest and most imminent danger to Middle Eastern peace and stability, or indeed to world peace and stability. Now, the Bush administration tried to coerce Iran to give up its quest for nuclear weapons, not very successfully, but at least it tried. The Obama administration, of course, adopted from the beginning the engagement approach. And already from his inaugural speech and then from the Arabia interview, which was the first interview he gave to any television or media outlet, He said that if Iran unclenched its fist, it will find our extended hand. He repeated it on several occasions. When he was in Cairo, he tried to appease them by saying that no one has the right to deny others nuclear weapons, and therefore we should opt for complying with the NPT and opt for a nuclear-free world, and so on and so forth. Of course, putting the Iranian nuclear weapons within the NPT program is nonsense, even if Iraq were not a signatory to the NPT and would have had the legal rights to seek nuclear weapons, it should have been stopped, because the nuclear weapons are motivated not by defensive considerations, but rather by imperial outlook that was outlined by the founding father of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini, which basically said that he would continue to fight until he spread Islam throughout the world. And this is basically what they mean. And the Iranian response to Obama was quite predictable. I mean, they interpreted it as a sign of weakness. They asked for apologies for American behavior in the Middle East. And, of course, they didn't stop the nuclear quest. The second issue is Turkey. Again, Obama went to Turkey even before Cairo. It was the first talk that he gave a public speech. He bent over backward to the Turks, speaking about democracy, secularization, Turkey joining the EU, Turkey as a bridge between West and East, at the time that Turkey is going the opposite way. I mean, the secular tradition established by Ataturk is completely emasculated by the present Islamist government, which is quoting Iran, which is quoting Hamas in Gaza, and so on and so forth. Then the third issue, where Obama basically failed big ways, the Arab-Israeli conflict. Again, the story here is quite clear and well-known. I mean, it tries to core the Muslim world by basically selling Israel down the line. I mean, okay, this is not completely unpredictable. Normally people, you know, give in to enemies they are afraid of at the expense of friends they can take for granted. I mean, it's not a nice human quality, but it's human. Plus, Obama has his background that we can talk about later. But the fact of the matter is that his policy of leaning very hard on Israel and trying to deliver Israeli concessions had the opposite effect, because the Palestinians, who are not really very interested in moving towards peace in the first place, saw that Israel was going to be delivered by Obama, and therefore they have no reason to negotiate, and therefore they abandoned the direct negotiations which had been going on since the Oslo process began in 1993. So suddenly Abu Mazen, the moderate, didn't want to speak directly to the Israeli government for various pretexts that he manufactured. But the underlying cause was that he thought that Obama would deliver the goods. And only when they realized that they're not delivering the goods, so Obama began, he had domestic problems, elections for Congress, and so on and so forth. So Obama began speaking in a somewhat different way, to a different extent, and now the Israelis and Palestinians are supposed to come back to the negotiation table next month, and it still remains to be seen what will come out of it. So to cut a long story short, so if we look at Obama outreach to the Muslim world a year and a half after its announcement, it's complete failure. Iran is continuing its quest for the bomb. Turkey is moving further in the direction of what people call neo-Ottomanism or Islamist foreign policy. The Arab-Israeli conflicts have been set back. Hamas has basically strengthened its position and going in the direction of international recognition. So the fact of the matter is that if Obama wants to move forward, he has to understand that, A, there is no peaceful way to stop Iran's nuclear ambitions, because they stem not from defensive consideration, but from an imperialist brand of Islamism. So this doesn't mean necessarily a military strike immediately, but military strike, of course, is a serious option. He has to say up front that Turkey's Islamist drift is going to make it an enemy of the West rather than an ally that it has been. He has to acknowledge that Hamas and Hezbollah will never reconcile themselves to the existence of a Jewish state on however small part of what they perceive to be the house of Islam. And he has to understand that America cannot resolve the Arab-Israeli conflict unless the Arabs and the Palestinians will understand that a Jewish state is a fact and they have to eschew their genocidal hopes for Israel's destruction and accept the right to statehood. If he continues to fail to grasp this reality, so we have a big disaster at our hands. So I think I'll stop at this point and we can open the floor for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I will announce each caller prior to bringing you into the conference. Please remember, if you have your phone on mute, take it off mute when you selected to ask your question. Again, to ask a live question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes from the line of Mr. Bob Gazzardi. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Karsh, thank you very much for your presentation. I've read your excellent material in the Middle East Forum, and it's most impressive. My question relates to Pakistan. You've talked about Iran. You've talked about Turkey. And Pakistan, of course, is the nuclear-armed Muslim state. And by tilting towards the Muslim states, aren't we tilting away from our natural ally in India?
Yes, thank you very much, Bob, for your question. I mean, normally I follow Pakistan to a lesser extent. In fact, we have an article in the coming Middle East Quarterly about what can be learned from the legends of the British in this area, and it's not very encouraging. So I think Pakistan is a big problem. I mean, you know, I think the United States will have to find a way to contain the threat of nuclear leakage from Pakistan to other places. And I think India is more reliable and more important ally in the long run, definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Mr. David Schifrin. Go ahead, please.
Professor Karsh, you are a breath of fresh air. My question is, although you may be unfamiliar with the American press, do you have any thoughts as to why the press has been so protective of Obama despite the failure of his outreach to the Islamic world?
I didn't hear the beginning of the question. Who protected Obama?
Do you have any thoughts about the American press refusing to criticize Obama about his failure of outreach to the Islamic world? Why has the press been so protective of him?
I mean, it's a dangerous question because if I speak my mind too freely, probably they won't publish my articles in the future. But, I mean, Obama was elected in a way, I mean, personally, I'm not American, I cannot tell American what to vote, and I just speak as an outsider. But apart from the fact that I felt that Obama's views on the Middle East, on Israel, on European issues were completely wrong, and he didn't have any experience whatsoever that would have qualified him to become, you know, to take a job at a much, much lower rank, not to speak about the most powerful job in the world. I think Obama came at a certain, I mean, he was very fortunate to come at a certain period in time that Americans were tired with, you know, Afghanistan, with Iraq, with the Bush administration. He was the first Afro-American, eloquent, young, and so on and so forth. And There was a mesmerization around the world, around within. There is no doubt about this. I mean, even in Israel, you know, that today is completely unpopular. It was extremely popular. And the media, of course, was leading it. And the media is the last one to be disabused. I don't think that they can concede to themselves the fact that they basically, you know, inflated a lot of hot air into an empty vessel. And this is part of the story. Then, of course, media in many countries, I think, this is another sociological question, I guess, that has to be answered. But media, I don't know, is what is called left-wing tendencies for whatever in America, probably you can call it liberal versus conservative or whatever. And that's the way it is with most media. I mean, that's the same in Israel, that's the same in the United Kingdom, that's the same in Scandinavia, and in other countries, I presume it's also. And therefore, this is the man on their side, so they're bound to support it. So I think it's a combination between the fact that they cannot come down back to ground reality after the hype. They won't admit that they basically blundered in a very big way. And of course, they have antipathy for the other side. So even though Peter Beinart, I think, recently wrote that Obama has come to a position that Peter Beinart misses Bush, but most of the media will not concede this fact because they are the last one to acknowledge mistakes. So I think it's a combination, and I don't think in this respect it's unique to America.
Thank you. I think
it's a universal phenomenon.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Mr. Murray Levin. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you for your observations, Professor Karsh. Also, I wanted to say that I very much enjoyed your book, Palestine Betrayed. My question is, recognizing that the sanctions that have been put on Iran are very unlikely to be successful, would you compare and contrast the package of sanctions that were voted during the Bush administration with the more recent sanctions that were voted during the Obama administration?
Thanks for your kind words, first. Sanctions in it throughout history have not really worked. I mean, in most cases, I mean, you can say South Africa, they worked because, but this was a unique case. I mean, there are sanctions against Iraq, for example, for a long time under Saddam Hussein, and they achieved in many ways the opposite result because the regime controls the resources that come in, and of course they divert them from the people who need them to regime survival. So in this respect as well, in Iran, I don't think sanctions will bite. I mean, the sanctions that you can bite, maybe, you know, if you go and starve them of financial, you freeze their accounts abroad, you control the flow of oils, and other vital things. But then again, I mean, I'm not sure it's enough because the regime is very ruthless and it will tighten its grip over the population. I think there was a good chance to do something when there were the Iranian elections, I mean, last year. And they were obviously rigged, and the Iranian opposition came to the streets because there is dissatisfaction in Iran. I mean, the revolution has been now for 30 years. And like any revolution, I mean, it's getting corrupt and it's straying off the ideal. And most people suffer, and you could see it last year in the election that people overcame the barrier of fear and came to the streets to demonstrate. And what did the American administration do? I mean, they backed down, they tried not to offend the regime, and they basically betrayed the people because Obama, time and again, in his inaugural speech, he already said that those who oppress their people are on the wrong side of history, and so on and so forth. And the first moment you have opportunity to show you know, to put your money. You fail, and the Iranians, of course, saw it, and the Iranian president not only that he didn't appreciate the Americans staying back, he demanded apology for American interference in the Iranian election. So what I'm saying is that sanctions as such, I don't see any way they are working. Subversive activities, probably trying to encourage the opposition, which is difficult as well. I think it might lead eventually to a military strike, which is, again, a very, very difficult option. I don't know if Israel will be able to, you know, if the present leadership is strong enough to take the decision on its own. It's a very difficult decision because it means war in the Middle East, it means terrorism, it can mean higher oil prices and other things. And if Israel acts alone, it's going to be internationally ostracized, despite the fact that the Arab world will quietly support it. I mean, there is no doubt that most Arab states are supportive of a strike against Iran, regardless of the recent Brookings Zoghbi poll. So, in this respect, I think Bush administration at least try to move more assertively. The Obama administration, I don't see yet sanctions going anywhere. And there is a sense, I don't know, that somehow the Obama administration tacitly acquiesced in a nuclear Iran and basically thinking about how to contain a nuclear Iran rather than how to prevent it. And this is, of course, a disastrous way of thinking.
Thank you. There are no further questions. Mr. Karsh, I'll turn it back to you for closing comments.
Okay. As I said, the situation is not encouraging at all. I mean, I don't see a clear learning curve with the Obama administration. I see tactical maneuvers. I see realization, for example, on the Arab-Israeli conflict the strategy adopted backfired, and because of domestic constraints, as I mentioned, the elections, the impending elections, where the Democrats don't seem to be in very good position, he decided apparently to back off a bit and take some pressure off the Israeli government. But there are no signs that he understood the basic thing, which is that basically it's not only... Okay, you have the Hamas, which is the stronger party today, and of course Abu Mazen is much weaker, and by the way, is not even the constitutionally legal president, because his presidency expired in January 2009. He unilaterally extended it by 1 year, but we are already 7 months beyond this 1 year. And even this, of course, is completely illegal, and you think that if this is the way that the Palestinian Authority is being conducted, what is all this talk about a democratic state that is going to be established side by side by Israel? So there is no recognition that he accepted it. If you look at the American domestic scene, there is reluctance to see the fact that various acts of terror, like in Texas, New York, the Detroit attempted bombing, are pattern of a wider Islamist, jihadist, terror strategy. So the Obama administration, I think, continues to put its head in the sand. And the prospects don't look very bright. The question is whether the American people will get back to its senses and vote him out in 2 years' time. But, I mean, it's a long time and it's not clear at all. And at the moment, personally, but I'm an external observer, I can't see a Republican candidate who can sway the American people with him or her. And in the final account, it will be this, because if Obama will be reelected, it's not because the American people is mesmerized with him as it was 2 years ago, but rather because there is nothing on the other side. And in this respect, I hope there will be, because I don't see how the Obama administration can regroup and embark on a realistic policy in the Middle East, or for that matter, anywhere else in the world. Thank you very much.